Always discussions of truth, opening up with Seek and Destroy. James Hetfield, Metallica there. Look, I simply can't find an alternative song that conceptualizes best why I do this program. Approaching the four-year mark now. Yes, 3.5 years we've been doing this. And Seek and Destroy conceptualizes again exactly what the principle of the program aims to do, and that is seek out and destroy corruption. And corruption is running rampant globally. We try to dissect those issues here in the United States. Mass media, mainstream media, if you will, simply is not doing that. They are puppets of central banking schemes. There's absolutely no doubt about that. 3.5 years ago, I was exposed to the Zika pesticide, the pesticide used to combat the Zika virus, that is, something called NALID. And as I listened to both sides of the argument, the government seemed to be turning a deaf ear, if you will, to the cry of the public. This is a constitution. You should not be turning a deaf ear to what pregnant mothers are screaming. They want they're the taxpayers. They want a different pesticide to be sprayed and used to combat the Zika virus, because studies out of Europe where the pesticide is banned show that it is a neurotoxin. They should be receiving an alternative pesticide. Philip Levine, who I heard with his council members, his legal counsel, Eileen Hudak, Miami-Dade, Deputy Mayor, and call from the CDC, all allowed their strings to be pulled like a puppet. I stand by that as I was interviewed by CBS reporter Michelle Gillen after the town hall meeting. And on that 5 o'clock hour of CBS News, I can be heard as calling them out as being puppets. 3.5 years later, I stand by that. And now we've got a completely, and by the way, please access that article via Honey Colony. Miriam's been a program guest 3 times, Miriam Henning. She's been trying to save the declining honeybee population for over a decade. Last I heard, now it's been a while, but last I heard she interviewed Aaron Brockovich, and I believe she had been in talk about joining the a major program via HBO. I don't know what the latest is with Miriam, but you can find via Honey Colony, her website, the article that I wrote in response to my finding of the Zika virus and pesticide, NALID. We will be joined momentarily by medical doctor Michael Hall. He's an anti-aging specialist, author, and fortunately humanitarian. He's a Missouri native. His history of medicine goes beyond 2007, establishment of the Hall Longevity Clinic in Miami Beach. He's been practicing medicine for over 20 years and explains his role as a healthcare professional as a mentor, helping his patients balance the mind, body, and soul. Selected to attend medical school at the age of 17, Dr. Michael Hall, is confident and knowledgeable and intensely interested in discovering the world's best remedies and procedures aiming at increasing human health span and slowing down the process of aging. He was part of that Miami Beach community 3.5 years ago, so it was exposed to that controversial pesticide, Naylid, also known as Dibron. Now, he'll be joining us here in a few moments. Why I set out to do this program. It was by invite. As I dug into the research, as I dug into the argument about the pesticide, what came across and what I learned came across my view, and what I learned absolutely blew me away. Freedom Reserve, No More Lies, being published by Trine Day, the published date being pushed back. That'll be coming out in July now. It's scheduled to come back in April. It's coming out in July now. You can find it at publisher Trine Day. You can get it on Barnes & Noble. You can get it on Amazon. That book is a resemblance of the early research that I did in regards to this controversial pesticide and virus. No one saw coming what we have today in regards to this global pandemic. No one saw that in the Miami Beach community. I don't think anybody saw that anywhere in any community unless you knew exactly what was happening. So next week, we'll be hosting another incredible guest to the program. Helen Byninsky. You can find her dissecting Wikipedia and the corruption in Wikipedia and the internet. Chris Hedges' show on Contact. You can find her website, helenofdestroy.com. She will be, she's an investigative journalist, contributor to RT, Russian television, also InfoWars. She will be joining us next week at this hour to discuss her findings and understanding of what's happening globally with this pandemic, this lockdown, the controversial aspect, the side of microchipping human beings, what's going on there in regards to Bill Gates, understanding the world that we are being given, not necessarily evolving into. Much of this is by design, and I want to point your direction to an article. If you simply type in Project G2101, it's a Pentagon biolab discovered MERS and SARS like coronavirus in bats. Project G2101. There you will find some very interesting information. And she has also been invited onto the program. We have not received response from her yet. She is Bulgarian, I believe, Bulgarian journalist. Diljana Gatendzieva, I believe is the pronunciation of her name. But I at least want to direct you to the Project G2101, which she writes about extensively. The Lugar Center, which is a Pentagon laboratory in Georgia's capital of Tbilisi. Again, I'm not sure if I've got that pronunciation right. But again, basically, this is an umbrella of various information that I have been privy to in regards to listening to the debate in Miami Beach, listening to both sides of the argument, listening to the threat of Zika versus listening to the pesticide. You're dealing with the same type of Hegelian dialectic prompt in regards to, well, the COVID-19, the threat of being exposed to it, or wear your mask and stay locked in your house and forfeit all of your inalienable human rights. Last week, John Waters joined the program from Dublin. He's a former journalist, and he is standing up in Dublin to the highest court fighting for these same inalienable human rights. So it all depends on how you look at it and what your threshold is, folks. What your threshold is, how much will you put up with? What you can peel back is you can say, well, in the United States, okay, we've got the biggest military on the planet that we know of, at least. We certainly don't have anybody invading us physically, but have we been invaded economically? Has our banking system been invaded? And is this a stealth, covert invasion? That's what you need to be asking yourself. And Brigadier General, who joined us last week, Robert Spalding, says that yes, the U.S. government has clearly been invaded in a stealth manner. Okay, that came out of his words. Now, next hour, this is a triple header coming your way. Getting ready to receive Dr. Michael Hall out of Miami Beach. We'll follow that up by Andy Thomas and his current book, Conspiracies, the Facts, the Theories, and Evidence. Again, he is an English-based author, and he goes into various conspiratorial type theories. You can use that phrase as you like. I tend to steer away from it because all it does, basically, in my view, is it labels anyone pushing the envelope, anyone looking at alternative views than what is fed to you by the mainstream, in question. It's a degrading term. Really, it can be used as a degrading term, but if you flip it, it's not a degrading, it's an upgrading term, because it's basically identifying people that are saying, hey, wait, I'm gonna stand up for other people's rights. So Andy Thomas will be joining us the second hour, and then we will round out the triple header with Den Bishop. Den Bishop is author of The Voter's Guide to Healthcare, a nonpartisan, candid, and relevant look at politics and healthcare in America. So, without further ado here, we are ready to bring on Dr. Michael Hall. Next week, the program will be hosting, again, as I mentioned, Helen Byniski. Also, Nick Binge, who's a UK author, and he's written a book about artificial intelligence. And then we'll be hosting Robert Scott Bell, who has his own program, May 27th. Again, you can catch me here on Wynwood One Radio, WynwoodOne.com, or IanTrottier.com, or Stop Mass Media. There's various outlets that I'm broadcasting on. Always Wednesdays, the 5 o'clock hour PM. That has been moved up now for about 7 weeks now, starting at the 4 o'clock hour Eastern Standard, because we simply have the need for dialogue and engagement regarding this current pandemic. So anyway, May 27th, James O'Keefe will be joining the program along with Seth Dillon, and then June 3rd will be opening up the month of June with Gerald Posner, and I will likely be bringing back on, granted her schedule permits, Dr. Bandy Lee out of Yale, who has criticized the mental state of Donald Trump. Gerald Posner's book, Pharma, it's an 800-page expose completely obliterating the pharmaceutical industry. And then later on in June, Anton Chaitkin will be rejoining the program. We'll be following that up with Barbara Bowen. So we've got a slate of some great guests coming your way, and again, what I'd like you to do is take a moment and simply type into your public search browser Project G2101, Pentagon Biolab discovered MERS and SARS like coronavirus in bats. Okay, you need to be dissecting and educating yourself about these issues, peeling back the layers of the onion. Turn off your mainstream media. It's completely brainwashing you. And like Ray McGovern, who spent 27 years in the CIA hand-delivering briefs at one point in his career to George Bush Sr. in the White House on a daily basis, Ray on this program about 2 years ago said, Ian, programs like yours are the last hope of getting the necessary information out to the general public in the United States. So spread this message. And do it with those that you know you can trust, and just simply do it. There we have it. Okay, so opening up here with Michael Hall, bringing in Michael Hall. Thanks for tuning in, by the way. ImpeachMassMedia.com.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Michael, thanks for joining. Welcome to Discussions of Truth. I'm quite well. How are you, sir? And how is the clinic?
Can you hear me okay? Radio check. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Yep. Okay. You can't hear me. I can hear you.
Yeah. No, I've got you. I've got you. I just wanted to make sure.
Anyway, so welcome to the program, Michael.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well. How is the clinic going in this lockdown? Are you doing virtual consultations? Give listeners an idea what how you've treated this this lockdown.
Well, you know, everyone is in a state of fear and loathing right now, and
okay, reconnecting here.
And can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, we had a we had a connection issue, but you're back on.
Okay. Yeah, no, so yeah, no, I'm doing everything remotely, treating patients remotely. I have a nurse practitioner and my staff that I coordinate with, and we make home visits. And that's kind of how we've been doing things.
Great. Now Michael, for listeners out there, I didn't give too much of it. One of the things that caught my attention, of course, was the fact that you were selected to attend medical school at the age of 17. But the reason I reached out to you were two things. Miriam Hennen. Somehow I came across the stuff that you've done via Miriam Hennen. Miriam's been a program guest three times for us in the past 3.5 years. She runs a website called honeycolony.com. But more importantly, more pertinent, Michael, to what's happening right now, apart from the fact that you went through the Zika scare and virus and whatever it was in Miami Beach, as did I. But you have had dialogue, and we can get to that in a little bit. You've had dialogue with Dr. Fauci, which I think will really blow listeners' ears away. I mean, it should really just blow them away. But as I had mentioned, Michael, you were selected to attend medical school at age 17. Take a moment, if you would, and simply give a brief introduction to yourself and what you do.
Sure. Well, you know, I started out as a young idealist in Kansas City, Missouri, where I was brought up. I had always wanted to become a physician, and there was the very first six-year medical program in the country, which is a BA/MD system, similar to what they do in Europe. It was established at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, and I was selected in high school to attend, and I knew I wanted to be a doctor, and I attended a six-year, year-round program. And when I completed it, I was and went on to do my internship in New Orleans at Alton Ochsner in internal medicine, and then proceeded to go on to do an ophthalmology residency at New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center. And that was in the late 90s. At that time, I was witness to a variety of racially profiled, racially driven decisions that came about from my staff who were white, who were primarily Jewish from the Upper East Side of Manhattan, very, very intelligent, very well-respected men who primarily had their own private practices and were the attending physicians for the residents, and I was one of them. I was a senior resident in the year of 1996. I witnessed two cases of racial profiling, and one was a Senegalese national cab driver, and he lost his eyeball. And one was a black African-American child. He lost his eyeball unnecessarily because doctors would not come in and treat them because they were essentially black and poor. I documented this. I spoke out. I got into a lot of trouble. I was really crucified by the hospital. I was fired and then rehired and then refired and rehired. It was unbelievable. Went to the state. Department of Health, went to the state legal system, federal legal system, and we never got our day in court. they really did violate these people's rights, and they ended up, based on my information provided to them, I was a whistleblower under EMTALA, an Emergency Medical Treatment Act of Labor Act. That particular law sits on the books of every hospital. So that EMTALA complaint has a whistleblower's compartment in it, and that went on to protect some of these rights of these patients. And I tell you that story only to give you a history of how I feel about my patients and how I feel about people. And not that it was heroic or anything. It was just me speaking out and being a whistleblower. So that was 25 years ago. And fast forward to 2016, I'm a practicing physician. I ended up actually going and doing a family medicine residency and did integrative functional medicine fellowship at UM. And then did acupuncture fellowship as well. So I have a integrative functional medicine practice in Miami Beach, and I've been there for 14 years, and I've been practicing as a solo practitioner in my office. And in the year of 2016, I was apprised of an event that I had never thought I would witness before, but we were in a hot zone that put us into the, I want to say, bullseye of the NIH, the CDC, and the Florida Department of Health because of the Zika pandemic. And this was, you know, brought about by, you know, lots of hype, lots of news on, you know, what Zika could potentially do to people. It created tremendous panic up and down the Eastern Seaboard. It still creates panic for people, even to this day, especially pregnant women. And there was no Zika. It was a non-event. And I can tell you that, you know, for a variety of reasons, but getting to the more juicy bits, if you will, I was at the Aspen Institute. I go there every other year. It's a think tank. It's like Davos sort of light, if you will, has the top policymakers in the world, especially in America, but people come from all over. And Dr. Fauci, who was present at that particular meeting in 2017, I came up to him and specifically asked him about why Miami Beach and Midtown Miami were targeted to be sprayed with NALID, which is a organophosphate neurotoxin, which is basically sarin gas-like. And from that discussion, he went about telling me over a cup of coffee, very sheepishly, very nonchalantly, that the reason why that order was given, it was given based on his consultations with President Obama, Thomas Frieden of the CDC, who was the head at the time, and the governor of the state of Florida, who's now a sitting senator, Rick Scott, Governor Rick Scott. Senator Rick Scott now. So anyway, that consultation led them to spray Midtown and Miami Beach with this poison because they did not want to have the tourism impaired based on Zika. And the optics were that this would have provided some sort of protection for that Florida tourism. Even though they knew that there was no Zika, quote unquote, because there were no cases of Zika being discovered, being found. You know, there was no true epidemic going on in Florida. Nonetheless, they sprayed us with poison on four separate occasions. Each time about 10 gallons was sprayed, aerial assault onto human beings. And not only is organophosphate toxin poisonous to the nervous system, which is basically sarin gas light, it becomes a hideous carcinogen when it contacts water. So you can imagine every pool in a hotel or a home or residence was contaminated, and little children were swimming in that water, and tourists from all over the world, and no one was telling anyone anything. So it caused a ripple a shearing effect in our community. People came out of their skins, including mine. And I'm not a very politically motivated guy, but I went down and protested and got in front of City Hall and made a fuss and tried to get them to stop poisoning us, and they were not going to hear it. So,
yeah, but,
that led.
Go ahead.
I was going to introduce one other point, but go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'll come back.
Okay, just to sum up, put bookends on this. So anyway, after that, you know, we were everything we did was fell on deaf ears. The city, the state, the governor, no one wanted to hear us. So Zika kind of sort of went away. The hot zone was lifted. The CDC packed up. Their roadshow went home, and that was it. Well, then the city of Miami and Miami-Dade mayor. Jimenez and Hudak, the vice mayor, decided they were going to start spraying us with Nalid for the salt marsh mosquito, which is an innocent little pest, but they decided they were going to spray Miami-Dade County, which includes Miami Beach. I got word of that from one of Mayor Levine's friends, who I saw, and he told me one afternoon. So I went berserk, and I decided I'm going after these people to stop spraying once and for all. So I initiated a federal lawsuit, which seemed to help prevent that spraying. And that's when I went about going after Dr. Fauci personally in a federal lawsuit, which you can look up in PACER if you want. But it's definitely a real thing. It happened. Dr. Fauci, Governor Rick Scott, and Mayor Jimenez and Hudak were all personally cited in that lawsuit for crimes against the community and people being affected adversely from a chemical attack, essentially. So that's a true statement.
Yeah, I never dug deep in that realm to get to Fauci during that time. I went down other avenues. But one of the things that astonished me, Michael, at that time, I had suggested, I know there were other protests going on, but I had befriended a former JAG lawyer and had suggested a protest on public land out at the Tamiami Airport. And
yes, I remember that. Yep.
The word I got back, Michael, was discouragement in that, and I don't know who this person got the word from, but the word was, if you, and there were other protests, but the one that I had suggested, the word I got back was, if you organize a protest, you will be, the cameras will get thrown off, you'll be pushed on the private land, you'll be charged with a felony trespassing, and likely, and this is the kicker for me, Michael, was that you will likely be charged with a terrorist. They'll likely slap on a terrorist charge. So this,
yes.
Go ahead.
And that's, and I remember that. I am a pilot. I have a hangar at Tamiami. I know exactly when that was going to occur. And those planes were being fueled up and serviced, and the toxin was being placed into the plane's belly right there at Tamiami. And I do recall that, Tamiami would have been from the highway, and they would have probably put you guys in jail. And I remember that vividly. And I do believe that if they'd sprayed us one more time, jail would have been fine for all of us, because we weren't going to have it.
Right, right. Who were the, well, this may not be no information you know, but who were the contracted pilots? Who do you know that were actually flying those craft? Do you know?
I know that one of the pilots, they were sourced through Miami-Dade County, I want to say police, because I did hear of one or two of the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue pilots talk about it later. And that was that apparently they were some rogue guys brought in one of those departments and were paid to do that. There was also talk of that there was Governor Scott's wife owning the company that provided the planes. I don't know if the pilots came along with that, but the planes apparently were paid for a company that was based in Louisiana to provide aerial spraying. But the pilots, I do believe, came from Miami-Dade in the pool of pilots that fly for Miami-Dade police. And I don't know that for a fact, but I did hear something to that. And
So you've set a nice precedent for listeners to understand that you have fought to uphold ethics, medical ethics, and this is even from the early stages there at the Cornell Medical Center that you were at. So this is great for listeners. The Dr. Fauci issue, revisit that in regards to the lawsuit. How far did you get? Is it ongoing? Have you had dialogue with Fauci since you've filed the suit, and certainly after having that dialogue with him at the Aspen Institute?
Yeah, the issue with Fauci was that Fauci was, if you go back in time and you look at 2016, Fauci was mentioned as a consultant to the discussions that were being made to release monies, lots of monies. $1.9 billion was asked for. $1.1 was appropriated. And somewhere around $400 million of that appropriation was to go to Fauci to make a vaccine for Zika.
My goodness. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was part of the initial snowball. As the ball went down the hill, we started to see creepy crawlers come out of everywhere. You had the EPA that did not provide any guidance to the community or to doctors on what to do about protecting people from being sprayed with organophosphate neurotoxin, which is Maalid. They provided no guidance because they didn't want to provide guidance, because that would have opened up a Pandora's box of liability. The Florida Department of Health, the director was, her name is Celeste. I confronted both the governor and Celeste, Rick Scott and Celeste, the Department of Health head, in Wynwood, and approached them about why EPA guidance wasn't being provided. We have this on video. I spoke with Celeste personally. I gave her documents, and she took the documents. We never heard from her. So what was happening is that there was a group of us, there was a band of people that were community-minded people that were going out and asking these representatives at Miami-Dade, you know, Miami Beach City Hall, Miami-Dade City Hall, the commissioners, the dais. We were going up to them, petitioning them. Kristen Rosen Gonzalez, Michael Greco, all of these people were being asked, cajoled, begged, you know, please don't do this to us. Please put an injunction, you know, toward the spraying until we can really ascertain the needs. So that snowball and those creepy crawlers that we found popping out of that snowball, so to speak, were really ugly to us. So then we, with that information about Fauci and Frieden actually was, he is a rapist apparently, that happened in New York. He's now on the board of one of the Gates Foundations. He assaulted a woman sexually in his home. You can look that up. And apparently he got probation for that. These people are ugly, nasty, horrible people. And Obama and his minions, which are these people at the time that he was controlling, particularly out of the CDC, were coming to us with poison for something that did not exist. So we don't understand how they were treating the community like they were when we didn't actually have a disease to treat. So that then led us, in particular, one of my neighbors, her name is Cindy Matson, she's also on the lawsuit that we filed. She is a non-practicing attorney and has an employment law firm. She has a young boy, a young son, and his name's Luca, and little Luca was playing in the pool where I live, next door to where my office is, right next door to City Hall, if you can believe this. And these planes were spraying overhead poison on her and her birthday party with her son in the pool. So, yeah. So we were just hot as hell. We were our bees and our bonnet were going nuts. And I actually left the city for two springs because I was losing my mind. I got sick. I started to feel horrible. I had some kind of like stinging, buzzing effect in my brain. I couldn't concentrate. My dog got sick. So I was like, okay, enough's enough. We went to attorneys. We wanted to sue Fauci and Frieden and Levine and everybody. Everybody. We wanted to roll up everybody. We talked to prosecutors. We talked to you name it. We talked to ex-prosecutors, lawyers, you know, number of lawyers. Nobody wanted to touch this. Nobody wanted to go near this.
Why?
Not with a 10-foot pole. Everybody bowed out. Greco, Michael Greco, if you're listening, you are a weasel. Because Michael was supportive, and then he ran away and hid under a bush or shrub. I don't know what he did. And Michael did not want me to pursue the lawsuit. And I spoke with Michael Capone multiple times. And Michael, you're probably listening. You're a good man. Michael wanted Michael Greco to be involved with the lawsuit. Michael's a lawyer. And Michael Greco told me, don't do it. Don't file it. We're going to file it. Don't do it. I said, Michael, it's time. We have to do something. And Michael Greco turned his back on us. And I wanted him to be part of the lawsuit. And he wouldn't. Nobody wanted to be part of the lawsuit. Nobody. Nobody wanted to put their name on that lawsuit. And that I'm talking about, this is early on. Early on, we wanted an injunction to protect the community. We had Kristen Rosen Gonzalez and Mayor Tomas Regalado and Raquel Regalado. And they all came to our mediation, which occurred after we filed the lawsuit. They came down to the city of Miami-Dade County conference room. I was there personally waiting 30 minutes for Mayor Jimenez and Vice Mayor Hudak to come out with their attorneys as was the mediation was recommended by Judge Moreno, who heard the lawsuit, and they would not come out of their office. They were in there like little crying bitches, which they are, hiding from us, wouldn't come out, of their office, being mandated by a federal judge because they felt they were ambushed by Tomas Regalado, who was the mayor of Miami at the time, and his daughter, and Commissioner Kristen Rosen Gonzalez, who was the city commissioner at the time for Miami Beach. These were not people just of the community. They were actually, you know, these are voted in members, representatives of our community. And those two people were mandated by Moreno, who I like. The federal judge listened to us. He didn't like that we were not there without representation. He lambasted us for not being there. But we were pro se because we have a right in America to take people to court who are poisoning us. So he did listen to us. And he did not give the city a quarter. He did say, listen, this could be poisonous and dangerous to the community. So anyway, that makes me very emotional because we went down and we were supposed to talk to the city, and the city ignored us, ignored the mayor of Miami, ignored him. We're talking about the mayor of Miami-Dade right now. That guy, this guy, Jimenez, ignored a judge's mandated order for mediation because he didn't want to sit in front of the mayor of Miami, Tomas Regalado. And this is really sickening because if the public really understood what was going on, they really understood the machinations of what's going on, they'd understand what's going on now.
Right.
They'd understand what's going on now with COVID and what's happening in our community in general with the relationship we have with our government. Because I don't believe we're being told the truth, and I don't believe that we're really being honest in the community at large. And I do believe that Zika was a beta test for something bigger, which may be this or something to come. I don't know. But all I do you know, as a doctor, and I'm very ethical, very supportive of the community. I've done a lot of volunteer work throughout my life in Sri Lanka after the tsunami, in Africa.
Wow.
I support the Haitians after the earthquake. I was in the Bahamas last year after Dorian. I care about people, black, white, red, green. I don't care if you're alien. If you're a human and you have a heart, I care about you. And our representatives should have the same deference and respect to all of those people they represent. And I don't feel that that's happened. And it surely didn't happen with the folks that were involved with spraying us with poison. And that whole, the falsehoods that were told during that time.
Yeah, Michael, I'd like you to, this is a good segue. Yes, you're exactly right. The Zika was a beta. There was testing. What the testing was, it remains to be seen. Mila de Mer, perhaps you're familiar with her name, based out of Key West. She was found floating dead in her pool upon the morning prior to meeting with the EPA to deliver 2,000 signatures. This is my understanding. In opposition to a GMO mosquito plant that's owned by Oxitec, a British company.
Yep. I know about it. Supported by Gates, by the way. Supported
Interesting.
By Gates, by the way. Absolutely. Funded by the Gates Foundation.
So Dr. Petri
from the Caymans came to Miami. I met with him. I spoke to him. He didn't see a need to spray anymore. He felt that there was never a need to spray. And he still, I don't know where he sits with the Oxitec mosquitoes, but they don't seem to have really borne out their fulfilled purpose.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I'm against them. I don't believe that we put things into the environment that are potentially dangerous and destructive, and 4% of those females could potentially pass on genes that could disturb the entire ecosystem. So, you know, listen, we're up against princes and principalities. This is not what it seems. And yes, the beta test was to see how we would respond to being told that we are in a hot zone, in a pandemic. And I really believe it was to see how we respond.
Interesting.
And we responded in a way, some people went along with being poisoned and probably want more poison. And there are people that want that, you know, and there are people right. that don't. There are people that are awake, that are, you know, aware and conscious and don't want to destroy the environment. Remember, there are a lot of people affected by this. And we'll never know the true effect as, you know, there are cancer issues that, like I say, this stuff became a carcinogen in water. So we know the environment was impacted. We know that birds died, bees died, animal life was contaminated, it died, and people got sick. And I know that there were some cases of people getting really sick from the spraying. And I don't know, you know, we did a lot of blood tests and other things, and we never found out exactly, you know, who was being infected with Zika, but we couldn't find them. And the state, if you look at the state's numbers, all the cases that were coming in were outside the state. They were not, you know, endemic transmitted cases of Zika. So we were trying to figure out, like, we were looking at the numbers, like, these numbers don't add up. They're telling us they're the Zika cases, but they're all from people coming in from other places in the world, you know, South America primarily. And, you know, it just got very, very damning, I think, for the whole, you know, Zika, you know, crowd that were chanting Zika, 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 you know. It was like, okay, where's the Zika? You know, and we were waiting for the Zika and the babies being born with microcephaly. That never happened. Never happened.
Michael, I want to throw something at you, some of the layers of the onion from the Zika exposure were really not the Zika exposure, but the Dibrom Nalit exposure. I was led to a former Stanford Hoover fellow named Dr. Anthony Sutton, a philosophical doctor, and he writes extensively about various connections through, i.e., Bush family and banking system in Germany. Now, with that said, I'm going to insert something, and I want you to get into, I want listeners to hear your angle on what you feel is happening with this COVID-19 strain of the coronavirus that has caused this global pandemic. prior to that, I'm inserting this. This is available, public search, Google, WIPO, W-I-P-O, International Database for Patents. Microsoft just received a patent to publish, well, it's now published, the software is to run a cryptocurrency system off of microchipped human beings. This just happened within the past few months. Microsoft now owns that patent. With that said, Michael, please tell listeners how you feel and what you feel is happening with this COVID-19 pandemic. Your own words.
Well, to be honest, I don't know what's going on with what's going on with this pandemic. I can't even speak to that. It is beyond precedent to see something like this happen outside of what I know. And what I know is that we are experiencing a bioweapon attack, was engineered with one country, two countries, three countries, I don't know, but this was a virus that has been very well known. That have analyzed the genetic code of the virus and have determined that it is absolutely not of this natural world. Mm-hmm. With that being said, you know, there is the permutations that we are going into a place that humanity has never gone before. And I don't really like going into conspiracy theories, going down rabbit holes and start, you know, pulling the thread of that fiber and that sweater coming apart, because I can't prove any of that. What I can read and know and see, I talk about. What I know is that this is something that we never have experienced before as doctors. I talked to many doctors. Nobody has seen this thing act before in humans as it is acting. It does not behave as a normal virus. It doesn't incubate normally. It doesn't have the right R0 a normal virus has. You have super spreaders. You have things that we've just never ever encountered before. And what I've read is that there are things about, you know, the treatment of this that goes against what the mainstream media is talking about. We're talking about using therapeutic vaccines, using preventative vaccines, okay? Because Fauci and Redfield and Bricks are all really deep into vaccines, and they try to create a therapeutic vaccine for HIV, okay? Therapeutic vaccines are to treat kind of like you would with a medicine, a disease, where a preventative vaccine is kind of what you get to stop, you know, the disease from happening. So both of those types of vaccines are trying to be utilized, at least in the press now, trying to prepare society, American minds for a vaccine. That being said, that Bricks is a minion of Fauci. She worked under Fauci. And they are all failures in the extent that they never could produce a therapeutic vaccine for HIV. Redfield apparently went as far as to maybe make up data or to misrepresent data, and he got into some trouble for that. So if you look into the past history of these folks, they all are pro-vaccine, they're all very big on research, they all have their hand in a lot of, you know, virus vaccine activity. Now, with regard to COVID is SARS-CoV-2. It's a sequenced virus similar to SARS-CoV-1. It's a spike virus. It has these little spiky proteins, and on those proteins, that's how it will unlock a cell to invade it. This thing just, it's got way too many gimmicks in it. It acts like way too many different viruses. It's really a chimeric virus. And if you listen to Francis Boyle, who is the lead authority on bioweapon activity, in particular in legal purview, particular, he wrote the legal documents that were signed by Congress that were the laws in place for biological warfare. If you listen to what he says, and he is an expert, and he's a Harvard-trained PhD expert, still actively teaching. If you listen to him, and he's an expert, I am not, he says so much more of what I said and beyond that it makes your head blow up. You know, that this thing, if you want to research that, you can research that, and you will find things that are almost unspeakable. Now, getting back to reality, and the cognitive dissonance is so high right now, we don't know what to believe. We don't know to come out of our shell or not. We don't know if this thing's going to mutate into, you know, it's already got 90 different strains. The L strain in Italy, the S strain here, we have a combination of both. You know, there's so many things happening. It's really like a hydra. You know, it's too many heads to it to know which to look at. So what I think is the dust must settle and the pieces must be analyzed sequentially, methodically. There has to be a postmortem on how this thing arrived into our backyard and how it's created this, you know, pandemonium. Now, treatment, that's a whole other discussion, and I can get into that another time. But there are treatments out there that are, you know, being destroyed and talked about badly, and there are also other treatments that are being, you know, talked about being the savior.
Yeah. We had on W. Gifford Jones, who's actually 96 years old. He's, let's see, we've got a connection issue here. Give it a moment. Reconnect with Michael here. Michael, can you hear me? Okay, reconnecting here. Give it a few moments here. Got to wind the discussion down anyway. Hopefully we haven't lost Michael. Give it a moment to see if we can reconnect. Michael, if you can hear me, I can't hear you. We cannot hear you. Give it a minute here, see if we can reconnect with Michael Hall, Dr. Michael Hall, Miami Beach. Raising some very interesting points. It's been a wonderful discussion with Michael. I think we've lost him. Okay, let's try to give you one star on that Skype. We'll try to bring in Michael for some closing thoughts here. Again, trying to tie in Dr. Michael Hall of Miami Beach, bring him on for some closing thoughts. Hopefully we haven't lost the connection completely. Try to bring him back on. Looks like we may have an issue with the connection. Okay, give it a moment here. He may try to bring us back in and reconnect. Again, we've got Andy Thomas, author, UK-based author. It's going to be late for him. It'll be 11 o'clock his time in the UK. So we've got to wind down with Dr. Hall anyway. Try to give Skype a moment to collect itself, if you will, and we'll try to bring in Dr. Hall again for some closing thoughts. The third hour, as I mentioned, this is a three-hour installment today for Discussions of Truth. We've got The Voter's Guide to Healthcare, something really to talk about, unprecedented, the most economically, if you will, and I don't agree with that, but perhaps anyway, we can. It's a first world country, the United States is. And that country does not have a healthcare system to take care of the minor needs of 370 million people. So Den Bishop will be joining us on the program to bring a nonpartisan view as to his thoughts on interweaving some type of healthcare reform. Okay, we've got Michael here. Michael, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, we've reconnected. Good. Thanks for calling back.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Was that me or you? I don't know which happened.
I don't know. What's nice is that we've reconnected. We've got to.
Skype is a, you know, who knows.
Yeah. Finish your thought there, Michael. Finish your thought, and what I'd like to do. We've got a UK based author coming on the next hour, so we've got to wind down here anyway. But we do have a few minutes, and it's been a very informative discussion. If you've got if you want to finish that thought you were on, please do that. And I think you were kind of getting into how to treat this. And what I was saying, and I don't know what you caught, but W. Gifford Jones, who's based in Toronto, he's 96 years old. He's got an MD from Harvard. He's been writing entries to educate his followers since the 70s. His take, Michael, and this was over 2 months ago that he is on the program. His take was treating, and this gets a lot of backlash, of course, but his take as a 96-year-old was treating any virus, and he included that as being any type of coronavirus, with an intravenous vitamin C intake. But you don't have to close out with your thoughts on treatment. It really, what I want you to do is take your time, and listeners understanding that this is a very ethical medical doctor, Dr. Michael Hall, based in Miami Beach, who's fought for decades, really, your entire career, to uphold the Hippocratic Oath, which is what all doctors live by. That is a good moral ethics of helping anybody, really, that they come across, regardless of race or language or what it may be. What I want you to do, Michael, is take a few moments and really deliver home what you want listeners to walk away from. May 13th of 2020.
Well, that's very kind of you. I don't think of myself as anyone special. I'm a Christian. I believe in Christian ethics and morals and values, and that means just trying to help others, trying to help and do the right thing. Now, with regard to where we're at now as a society, as a species, I think we have to go out of our way to do things to help one another understand the moral imperative of where we're at as a society and as a species. We are being assaulted at a much higher level by misinformation, disinformation, by people that want to control us. And I say people, we're talking about, you know, large corporations, big government. And we've experienced that with Zika. We experienced, you know, that whole episode in 2016 to 2018. Now we're experiencing another episode of something. I think that people need to understand this is about survival of the species. It is about taking back our rights as sovereign, God-given, Bill of Rights believing people. We are not serfs, we're not peasants, you know, we don't live under a crown. We live in a community, you know, it's called America, that is the greatest nation on this planet, and it bestows upon us rights that no one can take away. And I feel strongly that we must speak out and be heard. And regardless of where the truth is, we must follow that path to the truth. However harmful or hurtful it may make us feel, we need to follow it. Now, if you wanted to look at, you know, where our leaders are right now, who to believe, I don't know what to tell you. You know, all I can say is that you have to take care of your immune system. I do believe in taking your vitamins and taking your minerals and taking your trace elements, and that includes zinc, and it also includes everything else that you need to do, including being outside in the sun to get your vitamin D. It means being in the ocean to get your salinity and your electrolytes if you live near the ocean. And we know that salinity, humidity, and UV radiation kills the virus. So being in an environment like that will give you a much greater advantage over getting sick. And this virus likes to infect people. It's 18 times more infectious inside than outside. So it's an inside problem. It's a problem that is going to persist
throughout probably the rest of our lives on some level. Epidemiologists say that 40 to 60% of the planet is going to have to, you know, come in contact with this for something to happen where it does mutate into something maybe not so harmful. I don't know. That's not my expertise. My expertise is in treating people with infections and diseases and things that I can treat them for. Right now, I really don't know what's best. And I do know that there's a lot of concern about using hydroxychloroquine and zinc and azithromycin. Well, we know that this virus likes to disassociate oxygen from the porphyrin molecule, which is on hemoglobin. Our hemoglobin carries oxygen, carbon dioxide. Porphyrin is part of the hemoglobin makeup. That porphyrin protein apparently becomes impaired by COVID. So the oxygen molecule doesn't get to where it needs to go. It doesn't come out into the lung with the carbon dioxide as it's supposed to go. So there's all of this strangeness going on with people's lungs. And whether it's a pneumonitis versus a pneumonia, whether you get a secondary infection with mycoplasma, and that's why the azithromycin works, I don't know. I'm not at that level of a microbiologist to be able to talk about that. But we do know that we're facing something that has never been seen before in our lifetimes, and we need to work together to come up with a proper solution.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Michael Hall. And Michael, interesting enough, former guest on the program, Dr. Judy Mikovits, she's a virologist. You had brought up getting some salt going into the beach, if you're close to the beach. And this is actually a quote relevant to states that are share a coastline, that are closing, have closed beaches. She says in response to that, why would you close the beach? There are healing microbes in the salt water. This is insanity. That's a direct quote from Dr. Mikovits.
Yeah, I have to second that. I mean, I totally believe in nature and nature's ability to heal. The ocean has the same, the ocean water has the same electrolyte balance as blood. Salinity in the ocean is healing. It causes a decrease in blood pressure by being in the ocean. It's soothing. It's relaxing. That we understand as humans, that's where we want to migrate to, and we want to heal. We want to relax. You know, we want to de-stress. And that removes cortisol from the system. It removes epinephrine and norepinephrine. If we're in fight or flight all the time, we're going to have those things build up, which are very toxic. So the ocean and being around water, you know, particularly the ocean and the surf and the sand provides that for us. But we know that humidity decreases COVID. We know that UV radiation decreases COVID. We know that salt water and salinity decreases COVID. We know that those things decrease the burden of the COVID virus in the atmosphere and also in the human. So overall, it's going to improve the overall quality of the immune system's effectiveness. And that's what we want. We want to be able to do that. So vitamin C works as an antioxidant, but also works as a cofactor for making white blood cells more effective, all right? It also works as a very effective repairer of collagen. So all these things that we hear talked about, they're not just made up to sell products. They're designed by nature for healing and for wellness. And the American public, one thing that you've not heard, and I'm going to tell you this, nobody said this ever that I've heard from any leader, is taking vitamin C, 3,000 milligrams a day, and taking around 1,000 international units of vitamin D are going to help your and boost your immune system. It'll help boost your immune system. So doing that is a real simple thing to do.
Yeah.
Just do that, and you're going to help boost your immune system. I'm not saying it's going to save you from the bete noir that's out there, but it will help. So take that piece of advice. That's what I live by. That's what I tell all my patients. And consult your physician. Talk to him. Find out, how do I boost my immune system? Stop smoking. Have you heard any leaders say stop smoking? No. If you smoke, it decreases your immune system's effectiveness. The T lymphocytes don't work as well. Viruses are defeated by T lymphocytes. So if you want to help yourself, don't smoke, toke, and vape. Do that for yourself for right now. Just do those simple.
Yeah. And if you don't like what your personal physician says, and contact Michael.
Ha ha. You know what? I'm just a lowly servant of the man above. That's all I can say.
Michael, thanks for joining the program. Looking forward to inviting you back on.
Okay. Tremendous. Thank you, Ian. Okay. Bye-bye.
Michael Hall, look, again, he shared a story with us, great discussion there. We could have continued with him. I've got Andy Thomas here coming up here to join the program. So, and they've got 3 hours slated for today. Look, he's been fighting for human rights, if you will, since being in, it sounded like he was a resident. You didn't catch that, Cornell. That may have been where he'd done his med school. I thought it was where he'd done his residency. I didn't catch it. Go back and listen to it if you'd like. But he's been fighting for equality in the medical industry since he began his career, before he was beginning his career. So what a wonderful advocate as a humanitarian to advocate for your rights. Again, another very incredible guest. This program has been very fortunate since it began to receive this type of contributor. So I appreciate your time listening. I appreciate you sharing this with friends. Look, folks, if it hasn't dug in, America is in crisis. There are a few things that you can lean back on to save you. And that would be, yes, your Bill of Rights. Yes, your U.S. Constitution. The system needs to be changed. There is far too much corruption in it. I did not know the Gates Association to the Oxitec GMO mosquito lab in the Florida Keys. Mila de Moore, I've mentioned her name various times on the program. She lost her life. She was found floating dead in a swimming pool in D.C. the morning of meeting with the EPA. Coincidence? I think not. Share the message. Folks, I'll be right back in a few moments with author Andy Thomas. You've tuned in to Discussions of Truth. Winwood won. This is Ian Trottier. Folks, be awesome.